What if women ruled the world? What would that look like? Well, that's what we're going to find out on this week's episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast, where we talk with John Gersma, author of The Athena Doctrine. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jantz, and my guest today is John Gersma. He is the Chief Insights Officer at Young & Rubicon and a pioneer in the use of data to identify social change and help companies anticipate and adapt to new interests and demands. He is also the co-author of the New York Times best-selling The Athena Doctrine, How Women and the Men Who Think Like Them Will Rule the Future. We also got to spend some time sharing a TEDx stage in Kansas City, too, didn't we, John?
We did, John. It was great to see you, and I'm excited to be with you today.
So in Greek mythology, Athena was commonly known as the goddess of wisdom, and I think qualities like courage and inspiration are often associated to that goddess. Is that what you were drawing upon there?
We were, and I think if you go back, John, to your history, your Greek mythology history, she was also the goddess of strategy and the goddess of mathematics, and I'm a little geeky, so I was interested in that. But she really was emblematic in her spirit of the types of leaders we met and the findings that we had when we went around the world, where we started to see people really focusing on leading in a new way by engaging and bringing civility to a lot of the work that they do.
And you actually, I mean, a lot of authors draw from their experience and write a book, maybe bring in some case studies. But I mean, you did exhaustive research, and as you already mentioned, met and interviewed and talked with people in many, many countries. So you want to talk a little bit about the methodology around your findings?
Sure. So what we did is we went out to try to understand how the public, citizens in over 13 countries, it was about 2/3 of global GDP, but how they were thinking about the state of the world today and what they were looking for out of their leaders. And we started to see a high degree of emphasis on wanting leaders to be more empathetic, wanting governments to be less partisan, and, you know, really trying to seek out leaders that would break through and really create some solutions to some really, really challenging problems around the world. And the data was consistent, whether we were collecting in Indonesia, China, you know, or back here in the U.S. And what we started to see was the emergence of these traditionally feminine traits and values. And this wasn't me ascribing this. This was our respondents. And we got there by studying 64,000 people across these countries, and we divided the sample in half, where half the people were asked to rate 125 traits as one of the most important traits guiding modern leadership. What do we need to solve today's problems? And the other half of the sample took those traits and they gendered them as either masculine, feminine, or neither. And so when we modeled the data together, we started to see that there was a high preponderance of leadership traits like selflessness, collaboration, flexibility, long-term thinking that rose to the top. They were most correlating with modern leadership, and they were also seen as feminine.
Well, and would it be safe to say that the research wrote the book? I mean, you didn't really go out there thinking, you know, here's our thesis. Let's see if we can validate it.
Yeah. No, we were looking to try to understand more about modern leadership. What do you have to do to be a leader, to thrive? But also, really, you know, even if you're managing a 4-person team, or you're thinking about your career at any stage that you're at, this is really sort of our learning, I think, was applicable to sort of change management and how you sort of navigate the future. And what people were telling us, John, was that the importance of these traits really reflect the very radically changing world that we're in. We're in a social economy, a sharing economy. You know, we're in an economy that's really focused on transparency now because of all the scandals and the global financial crisis. And that, along with the rise of millennial values, you start to see the importance of needing to have these sort of aspects of you really guide your leadership style. And unfortunately, too often in business and in politics, you know, it's pretty much a lot of the same. And that's where we started to see some frustration with existing paradigms of business and leadership.
Yeah, and I wonder to what degree do you think the fact that we are now in this, you know, social media and open communication and you can find out anything about anybody, I mean, what degree in some ways, you know, are things like cooperation and transparency and empathy being sort of forced on leaders who maybe, you know, even knowing that they were good traits, you know, maybe they didn't make as much money if they, you know, if they were more transparent and open and they didn't get away with evil as much. I mean, so what of that is, do you think, is being kind of forced on people?
I think a lot of it is being forced on people. And so some of this is just really enlightened self-interest. You know, we asked this question in the survey. It wasn't at all attached to anything having to do with gender, but we just asked this question, do you agree or not with the fact that today's times require we be far more collaborative in order to be successful in our careers? And we had, you know, 76% of people respond to that, and that number gets upwards of 80% among millennials. So, you know, I think it's a reflection of reality that, you know, you're in a far more, you know, sharing, guiding, flexible, agile, inclusive type of environment that you're operating in as a leader. That's not to mean that you aren't supposed to be decisive. You know, decisions and being resilient were seen as masculine traits among data, and they were also correlated with leadership, but you just start to see how the more modern elements of being more agile and flexible were things that people thought were important if we were going to get leaders to solve really, really intractable problems.
Well, one thing I'd like to suggest is that enlightened males like you and I, haven't we sort of always known this? I mean, isn't there a little bit of a duh factor to this? I'm not saying it exists, but I mean, in terms of intellectually knowing this?
Well, it helps to, you know, be dads with daughters like us. But I think that the important thing here, John, is there's just so much of dissatisfaction with a lot of the structures. You know, we ask these questions like, I'm frustrated with the conduct of men, or two-thirds of people around the world told us that the world would be a better place if men thought more like women. What was really interesting is that there were really high numbers of men that agreed with those statements, like in places like Japan, where it was 79%, or South Korea. And so I think what really, when we got deeper into it, we started to understand is that there's frustration both men and women have with the way business is run, the way politics are run, sort of the incumbency of a lot of these, you know, protocols and structures that prevent us from sort of being ourselves. And that's where we saw the most interesting insights to our learning. You know, when we interviewed these 100 innovators around the world, they were actually just being human. You know, they were bringing their own personality sort of into the mix and finding ways to break up a business model and really create some new solutions. I could maybe just tell you real briefly about one of the guys we met.
Yeah, yeah. But, share some of those, because I know you did when, as part of your TED speech, shared a number of those, and they are fascinating stories.
Well, there was one guy, John, that we just were so intrigued with. His name is Dr. Ayad Nattish, and he, you know, has a PhD in virology, and he's just a remarkably bright guy, but he told me that he kept getting stuck in his experiments. And when he went around the lab at Harvard, he basically was chastised by his colleagues. They were like, you know, why are you admitting you don't know something? You just look a little foolish. And I thought what was so interesting about that is that he got frustrated and he left Harvard and he decided to do a startup. And he started this company called ResearchGate, which is a social network for scientists. And, you know, in the span of a little over 3 years, he's now got 2 million members from 200 different countries that are working on 800,000 different papers. And, you know, so you've got crowdsourcing of otherwise sort of competitive people realizing a very simple and elegant solution, which is we can be more efficient with our time if we rely on one another to crack problems. And yeah, I think that's vulnerability, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it also really drives home the point that this isn't so much a book about women and how women should act as it really is a book about traits and behavior, isn't it?
That's it. I mean, 81% of people in our data said man or woman, you need both masculine and feminine traits to thrive in today's society. The issue is, you know, and I'm going to go straight at it, the issue is that business politics have for somehow imprinted that the way women think is somehow traditionally less important, which is absolutely ludicrous. And on top of that, it's actually the most essential thing we need to reflect this new sort of sharing, social economy. And so I think, you know, there's a sort of a side part to this that's really important to me as a dad with a 10-year-old daughter, which is that I really believe our research, I believe our findings that, you know, there's great ways to advocate for women and girls by having all of us men understand that these behaviors, these traits, they're inside all of us. We just don't use them enough, and they're great things that we can use to get ahead in business.
You know, one of the first thoughts when your book came out, essentially at the same time as another book written by a woman about women's issues, you know what I'm talking about, Lean
sure.
In. I initially kind of thought, well, how does this sit with that? And I think, of course, then I did a little research and found you shared your thoughts on this already on the Huffington Post. And I thought that I'm going to read one line from that I just think is probably sums it up. If you're a woman, be you. And if you're a man, open up. It's not about women leaning into the ways of men, but the other way around. And I'd love it if you maybe can kind of expand on that thought about the comparison of this book with Lean In.
Sure. Well, I think Cheryl's written a hugely important book, and it's going to resonate with a lot of women and a lot of men. I think what we tried to do was offer another contribution to this topic, this conversation, which is to bring men and boys into this discussion, because I think, frankly, when you talk about women's issues, most guys think of, well, that's women's issues, those aren't my issues. And we're really talking about innovation. We're talking about how you get ahead in your career. And so, you know, it's great to offer that message to women to lean in, drive their careers forward. But I also think it's going to be really, really important that politics, business, society, the way that we've imprinted these stereotypes on the way women think are really out of step with today's times, and they're going to be very important for guys to sort of lean back and reflect and think about how they can come to the table on such an important issue.
Well, yeah, and let me ask it maybe more directly. If I'm a man listening to this, how can I benefit from your research?
Sure. So, you know, you need to be yourself. And when I've gone around the country and I'm about ready to go on a world tour doing support of the book, most of the positive response I'm getting are coming from guys. They're saying, you know what, I'm actually not always myself at work. I've got to fall into the groupthink, and I've got to follow policies and the way that we do things. And what we saw with a lot of these innovators, John, was they were breaking convention. They were tilting at windmills by being themselves, you know. Dr. Mattish was a brilliant guy, but he wanted to be vulnerable in a way that was practical. And, you know, he taught me something valuable. You know, we always talk about learning from failure. You know, if you Google learning from failure, there's like 129 million hits. What he really taught me is that there'd be far less failing if we admitted what we didn't know in the first place. And that's a human response. So that's what I'm saying, is that we all have these things outside our 9-to-5 lives, but, you know, are we really using them to get ahead in business? Are we being selfless? Are we being empathetic? Are we being collaborative? Are we really thinking long-term over expediency? These are the things that both people want, and the stories that we sort of unpack in this book about the people that we met.
One little sub-theme or something that obviously I think important, probably can't be stressed enough, that there's certainly an element of folks out there that suggest that, you know, a lot of our wars that we end up fighting have to do with, you know, the male dominance and the male approach and some of the, you know, that's why I think all of your research that showed people weren't happy with leadership, you shared in the TED Talk that I saw and in your book some thoughts on feminine traits even in military leadership.
We did. You know, we met Orna Barbavai, Major General Barbavai, and she's the highest-ranking woman in the Israeli Defense Force. And when we were at the IDF in Tel Aviv, she talked about how she approached military strategy from the perspective of a mother. And what was interesting about that is she had this, I thought, was a pretty interesting quote. She told me that a soldier has to have a wider viewpoint than what he or she sees looking through, you know, the scope. And what she meant by that was that, you know, mothers, in her view, being a mother of two daughters, have to sort of assess the consequences of action and engage and think at multiple different angles about a conflict or a problem before really taking force. And she was first to tell me that, you know, nobody's stronger and more protector than a mother if they're provoked. But she pioneered a pretty interesting program where she rewarded soldiers, men and women, for engaging people and building their esteem as they were coming through the checkpoints around the Israeli border. And one of the things she did is she stationed both of her daughters at checkpoints. And so the presence of women has had a de-escalating effect on conflicts in her data, and it's something that she continues to employ. So, you know, whether it was an empathetic, vulnerable guy like Dr. Mattish or a very strong but very reasonable and practical woman, we just saw these really interesting people exhibiting a range of sort of different human responses, masculine and feminine responses that we all have inside us to sort of tackle problems.
There is some good news for men in this book, isn't there? I think there are a handful of traits that that do fare well, that are typically masculine traits. And I think that obviously your book is talking about balanced, but do you want to kind of share some of the traits that are maybe more commonly associated as masculine traits that I think men, you know, should look at as strengths possibly, and women should look at as you know, how to balance?
Sure. I mean, definitely the very strong sought after traits that people thought were essential in modern leadership. And by the way, we also talk about in the book about, you know, your own personal happiness in terms of people's surveys. But just to stick on leadership, it was about being resilient, about being strong, about being decisive, because after all, you've got to make decisions. But it was interesting to us to see how those things were balanced by more feminine traits of flexibility and nurturing and kindness. And I guess the key thing about this isn't about, you know, this isn't some sort of end of men book. It's actually designed to be really prescriptive for men to take advantage of behaviors that we all have. But the things that were seemingly more aligned with the future about this social sort of transparent economy that we're in were skills and traits that are easily applicable to either a man or a woman. In terms of how they think about moving forward. But, you know, John, one of the things that people have talked about is they've said, well, hey, you know, is this like, are these like soft skills? And, you know, there's been great research done on that. And that's part of it, I guess. That's the reflection of a transition from a manufacturing to a service economy that most of our countries are facing, where you've got to have more, you know, communication skills, be a better listener. But the other part of this really is, John, these people were really strong. I mean, these are people solving really difficult problems. You know, we met the head of the municipal planning director in Medellin in Colombia, which has dealt with decades of violence, often among conflict with the youth. And one of the things they're doing in Medellin is they're devoting 62% of the operating budget of the country to people under 30, with free schools, free you know, libraries, after-school programs, in an attempt to sort of break these systemic cycles of violence. So, you know, one of the things we're just seeing is these innovative men and women were just basically going out, realizing that the way things have always been isn't yielding the results that we need, and let's try something different. And that's where I think a lot of these feminine traits are starting to yield some impact.
Well, and going back to the comment you made earlier about, you know, some people saying I'm not really myself at work, and some, you know, in some cases that's, you know, decades worth of culture that has built that inside of an organization. And if you're a leader in an organization, and maybe you don't have advice or an opinion on this, but if you're a leader in an organization, you know, how do you start a movement and change the culture, you know, knowing that this is a good long-term approach? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we're doing, John, is we're building out leadership workshops for companies where the management, the executive management, their employees can actually go through the same data and questions that we offered people in the book and find a way to sort of understand sort of, you know, how they are set up and what are the obstacles to, you know, being more innovative and, you know, looking at not only how the organization is set up, but how the leadership talks and whether or not people feel like it's a place that is really in the best interest of their career and their development. But I think, you know, it really does start with fostering an environment that's open and allowing, you know, different points of view you know, one of the great champions for us of this book has been Geraldine Leiborn, and she's the brilliant marketer who founded and created the freight train that is Nickelodeon. And, you know, one of the things, she sits on a number of boards, often is the only woman, and she said her role in boards is to ask stupid questions. You know, and I thought that was such a brilliant comment, you know, she made to me. But that's the thing, you know, is that we get so aligned and so fall in love with our business models, the way we do things, that we just sort of steamroll ahead, and we often miss, you know, valuable input. And that's really a function of, you know, what Cheryl's talking about with Lean In, but also what we're talking about with just people opening up and being more flexible in a way to be more agile and to recognize new routes to solving problems.
I, for my last book, interviewed a company called Blue Sky Factory, and they have the most incredible culture. They, first off, everybody knows everything. So all the numbers, everything, you know, everything is shared with everybody. There is no hierarchy. They're functional teams, but then they rotate leadership through those teams. And there's total consensus on any sort of major decision. Everybody has to vote thumbs up, or it doesn't happen. And I just thought that, you know, that is a really incredibly working, example, I think, of a lot of the things you talk about in this book.
Absolutely. You know, we saw in our data 68% of people and 72% of millennials would work for less money at a company whose values they admired. And I think this is going to be a new terrain, especially important with millennials, in terms of, you know, whether or not the company's core values are set up in a way that are really, you know, human and ethical. And again, it's not to say that this is going to happen at the expense of profits. I mean, the innovators that we talk about in this book and the sort of examples that we show incredible new business models based on these, you know, traditionally feminine traits and values. You know, Giles Andrews and Zopa, we interviewed him for peer-to-peer lending. A really innovative guy named Tim Kunde, who created insurance with your friends, basically, yeah, where you go in to buy insurance. And, you know, these models are taking root. They're resonating and they're breaking through because they're different.
Well, and you know, the collaboration aspect of that, I love. I remember reading that story that you keep costs down because everybody gets after each other about staying healthy and about being, you know, doing this and doing that.
Exactly.
So you keep costs down, and it's such an obvious model for how many, many things should be run. So you were talking about workshops and some other things that you're doing. You want to share where people can find out more about any material related to the book, additional, because I know you have some other freebies and content there, and anything else you want to share?
Absolutely, John. I mean, if you go to www.athenadoctrine.com, you'll get some information. There is, first of all, we have the TED Talk that I gave at TED KC along with you. I've got that up there on slides for people to just take and give it in their organizations. All the data from the book is there if anyone wants to use it, reference it. In any of the speeches that they're doing on leadership or sort of their own research. And we've got detail and information on how to contact me to learn a little bit more about the workshops as we move going forward.
Okay, and the money question. Does your research suggest Hillary Rodham Clinton 2016 is a freight train that's about to arrive?
Well, she's definitely got a interesting time in terms of what people want in a leader. And again, I think the power of this book is there could be a man that could understand those traits just as well, and perhaps, you know, compete on that platform. So it that's, I think, the interesting thing. These are innovative men and women that are doing these things. And John, I'd also just briefly like to mention, you know, all proceeds of the book support the United Nations Girl Up campaign. It's www.girlup.org. And it's just a terrific group of interesting programs that are helping to sort of mint the next generation of young women leaders. And what we're doing is developing a forum to include boys into this in a way that hopefully inspires a new generation of leadership.
That's awesome. I'm very happy you shared that. Well, we are out of time for today, John. Thank you so much for stopping by. Fascinating, fascinating stuff. As you mentioned, you know, I have four daughters, and I think you have two. Is that right?
I have one, but sometimes it seems like two.
Okay. So sometimes your ears, you know, perk up a little more because you've seen the negative effects of you know, some of the things you're talking about too. Really, really brilliant book. Not a surprise to me at all that it has done extremely well. I thank you for stopping by, and hopefully we'll see you out there on the road.
I've always enjoyed your podcast, John, and I really appreciate the time. Thanks.
Thank you.